and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy here with Pat, and today is Thursday, September 24th, 2020.
We've got movement in the markets. Bitcoin is trading at $10,737, up 4.5%, and ETH is up 8% to $348, just around $350.
Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a digital asset management platform that does DeFi investment monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. Okay, first, Uniswap team may have misled the community over the team's vesting of their tokens.
Yeah, so this is an interesting issue. This isn't difficult. Someone tracked down the address that, so when they minted a bunch of Uniswap, these Uni tokens, they reserved 21% for the team. 20%? Yeah, the numbers are wrong, but it doesn't matter. Like, they reserved a big chunk for the team themselves, for the investors, for the team, for all of that. And on their white paper, or I guess whatever you would call the webpage they put up, they published a vesting schedule. When people went and did the math, they were able to look at the Uniswap, the origination contract. The origination contract does a vest, you know, obviously did the mint of the coins out to this wallet. You could look and see, all right, there was 20 million, whatever, coins, more than that, but 20 million coins vested this wallet, or immediately issued this wallet. It's possible to then go and look at the wallet and see if, or to look at the address and see if the address is backed by a smart contract. What you would normally expect is that they had set up a vesting smart contract that essentially programmatically enforced the vesting schedule that they had committed to in the white paper. Now, that's not strictly required. You know, companies and startups vest a lot of things that they don't actually vest through a smart contract. So there's a lot of really good reasons that they would want to do this. So, for instance, one really good reason is that it is pretty difficult to get a vesting contract that has they can handle lots of people with good revocations and a lot of security. So, you know, if you have a lot of employees and you're going to be vesting across a bunch of employees, you ideally would want to set up each of the employees with, you know, separate vesting contracts. You'd want to manage that. You'd want to have that audited and all that kind of stuff. You know, they turn around Uni in like a few weeks, something like that. I mean, just an incredible amount of time is how long it took them to actually spit out Uni as a token. So it doesn't surprise me a lot that they didn't actually set up a smart contract to disperse this. And so you have to imagine the company itself is probably holding onto the funds and is going to be enforcing the vesting. But, you know, this is one of those things. Yesterday we talked about how most people getting into this don't read smart contracts. This is one of those places where this can kind of bite you. If you are looking at a white paper and they are making some guarantees about stuff, like, you know, whether or not there's a pre-mine, whether or not there's anything like that, and you can't go and independently verify that, this is where the question, yesterday we talked about how you really need to depend on auditors. Well, auditors aren't always going to double check that what you are saying publicly, or what a company is saying publicly, is actually what is being enforced in their white paper or their smart contracts. So this is one of those cases where, like, it really does help to be able to read this stuff, because this was not a substantial amount of work. This is like 5 minutes of work to go and see if this actually got pushed to a smart contract or not. So this is, you know, there's places where it's worth learning at least some of the mechanics around here. And no, you don't even need to be able to read code to do this. Like, this is a matter of just look at the Genesis transaction around the Uni coins. You know, look at where the majority of those coins went. Go pop that address into Etherscan, and if nothing pops up, if no smart contract pops up and it just shows you a normal address, then you know that that's not backed by any vesting schedule or smart contract.
And what exactly is the concern of the community?
Well, the concern is that, I don't know, you call it, it's a rug pull, right? Like, the concern is that that vesting will not be enforced. You're basically trusting Uniswap and the company itself to enforce the vesting through, not like, it's a trust issue, right? No one trusts anybody in DeFi. That's the whole point of DeFi. The whole point of this entire crazy experiment is that it's all trustless and decentralized. As soon as you centralize control in Uniswap, then you're now trusting them to distribute these coins fairly and over time. And there's a really good chance they dump up, they, you know, distribute them all immediately and everyone dumps them while it's still at $10 or $6 now. And that's like, you know, classic rug pull, pump and dump.
All right. Also sticking again with Uniswap is some people are saying Binance may be the only one capable of making Uniswap governance proposals at the time, which doesn't bode well for Uniswap.
Uniswap made some really interesting choices. It's funny because the DeFi craze, hashtag DeFi mania, has been going on for a few months now. And there's been a lot of good governance work out there. I mean, there's some really cool stuff that's dropping out of this besides the pieces we know about. So besides the stuff we are thinking about every day, the different ways of doing liquidity, the staking rewards, governance tokens, all that kind of stuff, there's actually been some really interesting researchy kind of work dropping out of this, which is like, how do you adequately govern a DAO? How do you do proposals? How do you do all this work? You know, the mechanism they chose was to basically do a cutoff point at where you need to have 1% of the token supply in order to make a DAO proposal. I have no idea why they chose that number, because it strikes me that perhaps they thought that Uni would not be worth what it is. So if you come out and if Uni was worth, you know, I don't know, 5 cents or something like that, then and you have a market cap of $500 million, then getting $5 million worth of tokens to basically back a proposal is not a big deal. At $5 billion, you're now suddenly saying you need to have $50 million worth of proposal versus worth of power to even propose something. I kind of think that there's two. There's sort of like the cynical view and then the non-cynical view. The non-cynical view here is that they just kind of messed up how they were thinking about the numbers and they just underestimated it. The cynical view is they don't want community members making proposals. So they chose a high enough threshold that essentially only Uniswap's could be able to make proposals. Binance, I think this is super. So the issue here is that the way that Binance works is because people have been interacting with Binance basically had all these is custodying these coins for everybody. So Binance can then take those coins and actually vote their conscience with them. This is a really interesting problem. You now have a DEX with majority governance ownership, or at least proposal governance ownership with a traditional exchange. So what if they propose some sort of crazy thing to disperse all the funds directly at Binance, or they, you know, make some proposal? I don't know. I haven't looked at the details of the smart contract of what you can or can't propose, but what if they somehow burn the rest of the tokens or something like that to torpedo it, self-destruct it? So this is super interesting. It will be fun to watch. I think that Uniswap, you know, I read someone wrote a great article about how they probably should have waited. And I think that's kind of true. Like, I think Uniswap should have sat on their token for a little bit longer to think through some of these things and get a good vesting contract for their thing, for their employee tokens out, and, you know, deal with some of these loose ends that were inevitably going to come up.
Yeah. All right. So moving on quickly, just a little FYI, in case you missed it, there is a new Android malware that's targeting Coinbase wallets, Coinbase, blockchain.com, and Luno.
Yeah. Be careful with your wallets. You know, the only mobile wallets are safer, I tend to think, than desktop wallets. iPhone wallets are probably the safer of the mobile wallets. Android wallets are less safe. Desktop wallets are less safe. The safest you will be with your coins is a hardware wallet. So a Ledger or a Trezor, they essentially, the way they work is they keep the private keys completely off everything, off a computer. They're on a little device. You can put that device on your keychain. Everything stays off of it. That is the safest way to store your coins. Don't ever store anything in a mobile wallet or on your desktop wallet like MetaMask that you are not prepared to lose. Do not store all of your coins in MetaMask. Like, be very careful. Be conscious of the security risks. Get them onto a hardware wallet. You know, keep the majority of your holdings and savings on a hardware wallet, not on your MetaMask.
All right, quickly, one more story. So some DeFi influencers have been under fire for what people are saying is a pump and dump collusion after screenshots of their conversations were leaked from a private Discord channel.
Yeah, this is my kind of story of the day. I mean, obviously, you know, people are making money on this. The influencers have made there's kind of this like vicious feedback loop, I guess you could say, and incentive structures obviously all messed up around this. But influencers basically are, people will reach out to them and tell them about their project. Influencers then can be some of the first money into the project, and then influencers can then pump the project, and then influencers can then dump the project, and all of this is going to happen. They're going to make a bunch of money. So you have misaligned incentive structures on all sides of the equation in this situation. So, this is going to keep on happening. as always with everything crypto, be very wary of pretty much anyone talking about it. And that includes, you know, like that's everyone that you will encounter on Twitter. Just be aware that what they are doing, they are incentivized themselves. Like, and this isn't like the New York Times. People aren't doing disclosures about what coins they own. And even if they are, you can't really trust them all that much. So DeFi is, you know, it's transformative. It's incredible. It's going to change the world. But there's a, you know, there will be a scammy component to it. And there will be a very self-interested set of people, you know, working the system.
All right. Well, that does it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily.
All right. Have a good one.